back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Don, and Don revealed that his challenge with the evidence and reason that I was making available to readers, particularly through Yada Ya and later through Introduction to God, introtogod.org, but now particularly questioning Paul, was that as a Seventh-day Adventist elder who then came to reject many of the lies of mainstream Christianity, you still clung to Paul. And yet, you have correctly stated that the central thrust of Paul's letter to the Galatians is that if you're circumcised, then you cannot be saved. And he went to war against circumcision. And yet, in the opening book of the Torah, in Bereshith, in Genesis, Yahweh makes two statements about circumcision. One is that if you're not circumcised as a male, you can't participate in the covenant. And number two, you should not participate in Passover. Why did you think that you talked about what the connection was between circumcision and the covenant family. But why do you think Yahweh said, if you're not circumcised, you ought not participate in Passover, the doorway to eternal life?
Well, going back to Paul, I haven't lost your thought yet, or my thought. I hope I haven't lost my thought.
Okay.
Christianity as a whole is a very, very comfortable coat to put on. It's convenient. It's quick. It doesn't require anything. And, boy, you can slip into that prayer cloth or that cloak, whatever you want to call it, and read Paul and never understand what he said, especially if you're reading the King James and even the newer translations. They're the same thing. Whereas if you read Bereshith, the Passover is the step into your relationship with the Father. You are not going to get that from Paul.
Correct.
And as a Seventh-day Adventist, as a teacher and a leader and an eminent person, I taught that the edicts of the Seventh-day Adventist Church were enlightened through a person in the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to take those writings that were lifted, most of them, all of them, were lifted from the Torah, were actually lifted from the writings of Jerome, and point to Christianity as a very comfortable, convenient, easy to put on and take off at your convenience, whereas the Torah says that, boy, once you step through that door of Passover and you accept the upright pole, If you're not circumcised and you step through that door, you have just bought yourself an eternity separated, because Bereshith, the firstborn, the firstborn,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be part of it, so you're going to be stuck.
Right, and the reason for that is that
mm-hmm.
if you were to capitalize on the doorway to life, Passover, without crossing that threshold of perfection, matzah, where our soul is unleavened of the fungus of sin, and Yahusha describes it as religious and political sin. If you don't avail yourself of matzah, which not a single Christian on the planet does, then you end up immortal, but with all of your flaws, and therefore eternally separated from Yahweh, which means your soul is going to spend eternity in Sheol. And that's the reason why Yahweh says, don't do it. If you're not a member of the covenant family, if you are not willing to accept the conditions for being part of his family, then you do not. It's not in your interest. It's counterproductive to accept Passover. And, you know, in Christianity, that's the whole thing. You know, in Christianity, while they don't equate what happened on the upright pole, they don't even call it an upright pole, Passover, with Passover. They don't even equate the Passover meal that Yahshua ate with his disciples with Passover. They called it the Last Supper. And then on the Passover celebration itself, when Yahshua is observing Passover as the Passover lamb, they said that God died, as opposed to recognizing, no, it was the Passover lamb that was slain for eternal life, so then that the soul of Yahshua could go into Sheol to honor Yahweh's promises regarding matzah and what it means to be perfected in God's eyes so that we can become part of the family, adopted into the family. If you don't recognize that transition, then focusing on what happened on Passover, all it's going to do is make you immortal, but eternally separated from God. It's the worst possible outcome.
Boy, you see, you have just stepped out of a stumbling act that you had last week into a very professional host of this show. You just absolutely, you're 100%. You're batting it out of the park.
You're being funny. It is true that the reason that we expose and condemn political and religious and military myths in the first hour or two in this program is that so that people are willing to walk away from those things, to go where the words lead. You know, one of the things, Don, that is so profoundly important in our lives and something that Yahweh asks us to do constantly. I mean, I just finished studying the book of Yahshua, Isaiah. And it's the thing that God asks us the most to do, to admit that we're wrong. And when it comes to the point in your life when you could admit that you were wrong about first the Seventh-day Adventists in Christianity, and then Paul, I'm saying this of you, but, you know, as you know, I've had more practice than most anyone in admitting I was wrong. I used to be an ordained ruling elder in the Presbyterian Church. I was an evangelist. I was active in Republican politics. I was pro-military. I was patriotic. I've had a lot of practice admitting I was wrong. But, you know, it's the single most liberating thing I've ever done. Because the moment you can admit that you're wrong, you are then free to go where the words lead. And you know where Yahweh's words lead?
Oh, to him.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
To adoption. Adoption.
Yeah, absolutely right.
That was my big turning point. And I didn't realize until after I had gotten rid of Paul, I'm not saved.
Right. I'm adopted.
I don't need to be saved. Why would I want to be saved? I'm adopted.
Right. Saved to what? Adopted to whom? And the answer to that question is, you know, in Christianity, saved to what? But adopted to whom? Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Now, is it the father's responsibility to save his children?
Mm-hmm.
And so those of us who are adopted into his family receive the benefit of salvation. But it is one of many benefits of the covenant. And for those in his family, it's one of the least considered.
Oh, it's not even considered. No, no.
Yeah.
It's not even there. The convenience of putting on the robe of faith in Christianity once a week, maybe twice a week, is so convenient, Yada. I can't express how convenient Christianity is.
Yeah, let's speak to that for a moment. What Paul did in making his faith convenient is he capitalized on the preconceived notions of the Romans and the Greeks. The Romans and the Greeks had the greatest influence on the world. They were aggressively anti-Semitic. They were anti-Torah, anti-Yahweh, anti-chosen people, anti-Israel. And so Paul's letter to the Galatians, and then subsequently his letter to the Romans, was written to appeal to the preconceived notions of Romans and Greeks. And so in his faith, you didn't need to know anything. All you needed to do is accept Paul's gospel of grace through faith. It means you didn't need to know anything. In fact, knowing was counterproductive. If you knew the Torah, you would reject him. So knowing was counterproductive. It was just simply a matter of accepting Paul as being true. And that's all there is to it. There is nothing more to Christianity than accepting Paul's contrary view and contrarian presentation of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms as being true. That God lied, Paul was empowered to correct God's failings and his lies, and that all you need to do is accept that Paul's version is true, and you are saved as a Christian. It's comfortable to put on because it appeals to the prevailing influence in our world today of Roman and Greek society. It's easy. It's popular. But unfortunately, it's wholly contradictory. You just look at circumcision. Paul's position on circumcision versus Yahweh's are the opposite. How many covenants does Paul write about?
Oh, one.
No, Paul mentions two. Yeah, Paul mentions two. He advocates one, and he dismisses the other.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, he said that there was a covenant that was created in the Torah on Mount Sinai between Hagar and this God that enslaves. And that covenant is of the past. That covenant enslaves. And then he said there's a new covenant that he alone was authorized to convey. Does God ever suggest that the covenant was with Hagar?
No.
Does Yahweh say that his purpose of his covenant is to liberate from slavery?
No.
Actually, Yahweh does say that the purpose of his covenant is to liberate us, and demonstrably so, that his purpose is to liberate as opposed to enslave. So Paul's position are exactly the opposite. But we'll continue with the thought of, does Yahweh ever once speak of a second covenant? We'll continue with our discussion with Don in just a moment after the commercial breaks. We're having a conversation with Don, who is a former, an elder with the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Don is part of the reason that I dedicated many programs, in fact, a month of programs, to debunking every pillar of Seventh-day Adventism. And it's something that Don and I worked on together in episodes of Shattering Myths. But also, Don was a Pauline advocate. And so, as part of this journey, as a willingness to admit, as we both had to do, that we were wrong, because at one time I was as well a Pauline advocate. Don, personally for me, the turning point with Paul came in the fourth chapter of Galatians, beginning with the 25th verse, actually the 24th verse. And this is the place where I came to realize that the only way that I could continue to accept Paul was to reject Yahweh. I either had to reject the Torah or I had to reject Paul. That there was no way whatsoever that I could adhere to both. And at that point, I had to decide, is someone who claims to be speaking on behalf of God right when they completely undermine and contradict what God had to say? Is that even remotely possible? In other words, is the God of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms like Allah, and so incapable of coming up with communication that can be consistently true that he abrogates himself, that he contradicts himself, and that the most recent revelation, even if it is wholly inconsistent with the previous ones, is to be accepted as true and the previous ones are to be thrown away? I mean, that is the theory behind the Quran and Islam. Would that also apply to Yahweh, the author of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And this is the point, Don, where you and I parted company for a while. It's the place where I parted company with Paul. And I'm going to read it from the New American Standard Bible. The translation's not great, but at least you'll get the idea. This contains an allegory. For these, and it's assumed women, and he's speaking of Hagar and Sarah, are two covenants. One proceeding from Mount Sinai, bearing children who are to be slaves. She is Hagar. Now, this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia and corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children.
Right, right.
All right, so let's think about that. What Paul said is that there are two covenants.
Right.
How many covenants are presented in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms?
Only one.
Is covenant ever plural in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms?
Negative.
Never plural. And of his one and only covenant, does Yahweh infer that in any place or regularly that it is everlasting, that it is for all people and for all time?
Oh, many, 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 many times.
Is the only reference to a new, we'll put that in air quotes here. I know we're doing radio, but to those of you who are listening, I just put air quotes around new. Is the only reference to a potentially new covenant found in Yirmiyah, Jeremiah 31?
No, no, renewed.
Ah, so you're already correcting my air quotes. It does say renewed, doesn't it? And when he uses kadash, which is the Hebrew word for renewed, reaffirmed, restored.
Reaffirmed.
When Yahweh, and he speaks of this often, it's not just in Yirmiyah, when he speaks of reaffirming and reestablishing his covenant with Yehudah and with Yisrael, what he's talking about is taking the existing covenant and reaffirming it with his children, not creating a new one. But in Yirmiyah 31, he does say that the reaffirmation of his covenant with Yisrael and with Yehudah, and that's upon his return, so this is still future, will differ from the existing covenant in one way. Do you know how that the renewal of the covenant will in the future differ from the covenant as it exists today?
Well, it's going to be different in ways that we do not understand now. But the concept of it will be the same, but it won't be written on paper. It will be given to us as an internal part of us that we will understand completely.
Yeah, what he said is that he is personally, that this is now the only distinction between the covenant as it exists now and has existed since it was first formed with Abraham, and the covenant as it's going to exist upon his return. As he says, just before we continue with the discussion, since I have admitted to not being professional and being flawed, and that was part of Don's lead-in an hour and a half ago, I would like to explain what happened at the end of the last segment where my words just finally were overridden by a commercial, and I did not fade out with the sound of the buffer as I normally should. And that is that I am not particularly fond of many of the commercials that run on this program. I don't have an issue, for example, with Big Berkey or encouraging people to buy gold, but for the most part, you know, first of all, I don't make a dime on anything. I'm not endorsing any product. And I've heard these things so many times, and some of them commercials, particularly those that are selling snake oil, are irritating to me. And so I have asked Randy, who runs the board now for the show, to turn down the volume of the commercials during the break, because otherwise they just blare away in my headset. And second of all, I enjoy talking with the board ops during the break. They're all interesting people, interesting lives, and have interesting perspectives. And I like talking to them. And if I'm talking to them, I can't hear them if the commercials are blaring or the news is blaring at full volume. But the volume of the news and the commercials is linked to the buffer, which means if they turn it down to accommodate me during the breaks and don't turn it up, then that's what happened at the last segment. I could not hear the buffer, which is why I talked right into the news. So gives you a little insight here. You know, we try to be as transparent here as possible, including our hiccups. What I was saying was what we were talking about is extremely important, Don. And if we spend the next 30 minutes focusing on nothing more than this, then we will have used the time wisely. Do you know what? When he presents the renewal of his covenant, does he say the renewal of my covenants was going to be with the Gentile church?
No.
No. No, he doesn't.
No.
As a matter of fact, there is no concept remotely akin to church in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, or even in the Greek New Testament.
Right.
And although there is a Hebrew word for Gentile, which is goyim, plural, and goy, singular. The renewal of his covenant is not with the goy, the goyim, the Gentiles that comprise the Christian faith, is it?
No, it's with the Yehudim.
Yeah, in fact, it says specifically with Yisrael and with Yehudim. And Yisrael and Yehudim are different and yet the same. Yisrael relates to all 12 tribes. And Yehudah relates to one tribe.
Israel
was the northern kingdom, where Yehudah was the southern kingdom. There is a distinction throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms between the two for lots of reasons. We can go into it at another time, but not for this program. But the renewal, the reestablishment of the covenant is with Israel and with Yehudim, not with Gentiles, and most certainly not with the church. So it can't be the thing that Christians call their New Testament. Second of all, Yahweh tells us specifically the only thing that is different from the covenant as it exists now and the covenant as it will exist from the time that he returns is that he's writing a copy of his Torah inside of us, making it literally part of the fabric of our lives. And the distinction here is that right now, Don, you and I could choose foolishly to reject the Torah, couldn't we?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And we, if we were religious, we could choose to misconvey the intent and purpose and teaching of the Torah, too, couldn't we?
And that's very easy to do. That is much easier than what you have just said. And to new listeners that are trying to get a finger on or a touch a feel of what you're saying, I would say to Christians that my cornerstone of everything is found in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, especially 5. Where
seven.
I ask them to read that very, very, very carefully, and then just read Galatians 1 and 2 and 3, but Galatians 1 and parts of 2, and ask them, did Jesus lie? Now, that's a really, I call it my vinegar grenade.
Yeah, it is.
Gang around me get a kick out of me when I say, watch out, here comes a vinegar grenade.
Yeah.
And it's always hope.
Yeah, what Yosha said is that he did not come to annul the Torah, did not come to do away with any part of the Torah, but instead to be the living embodiment, to honor the promises of the Torah. And that if anyone were to suggest that any aspect of the Torah has been annulled, then he is to be called little and lowly. And that he even went so far as to say that not a single stroke or even the smallest letter among the Hebrew words that comprise the Torah will be annulled or in any way disapproved, disallowed, disinherited, so long as the heavens and earth exist. So does the universe and the world that the earth is, does it exist, Don?
I didn't understand. Question?
That's it. The question is, does the universe and does the earth still exist?
Oh, yes, yes. Excuse me, hello?
Yeah, so is it possible that when Yosha said that not a single letter that comprises a single word of the Torah shall be annulled so long as the heavens and earth exist, is it possible that what Paul wrote, which is that the Torah has been tossed aside, it is no longer valid, is it possible that, that both could be telling the truth?
At that point, a good Christian is going to put on their robes and accept Paul.
Yeah, they're going to put their fingers in their ears, and they're going to start saying, na, 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 na. If they're Pentecostal,
right,
they'll start slathering and blabbering in tongues. In other words, once you read what Yosha said about the Torah and him being the little literal fulfillment of the Torah, and that not even a fraction of a letter that's in the Torah is going to be disavowed so long as the heavens and earth exist, then you are in a position where you either have to accept Paul, you have to reject Yosha as being a complete and utter liar. Now,
right,
as it relates to this this statement in Jeremiah 31, what Yahweh is saying is that right now, every human, like Paul, can go out and they can reject the Torah. You are free to do so. But when he returns, you won't be free to do so. When he returns, all of us that remain will have made a decision, the same decision you and I made, which is to accept the Torah. We all would like to have a perfect and complete copy of the Torah written inside of us to guide us.
Oh, that would be wonderful. That'd be wonderful.
And we have all, that's what we are asking for, and Yahweh is going to accommodate us. And everyone who wants to object to the Torah, who wants to say the Torah was that part of that Jewish religion, that it's been replaced by the gospel of grace, not a single one of them are going to survive. But what you have to realize if you're a Christian is this renewal of the covenant that's spoken of in Jeremiah 31, is only for Yehudim and for Yehudah, Yisrael, and that it is predicated upon the wholesale integration of the Torah written by Yahweh himself inside of all of us, which means that there is a 0% possibility that a notion of a New Testament is valid. Now, I want to return you to Paul's statement. Paul not only said there were two covenants when Yahweh said there's only one. We just addressed that. But he equated the Torah, which is Mount Sinai, the book revealed at Mount Sinai. That's the Torah. He equated the Torah as revealed on Mount Sinai that its covenant was with Hagar.
Yes, yes.
What does Yahweh say about Hagar and Ishmael and their participation in the covenant?
Rejected. No. Go
Absolutely
away.
No. Was the, so was there a covenant with Hagar and with Ishmael in the Torah?
No.
No.
Ishmael was recognized and was given the promise that he would live and be successful, but not from Yah. Not
right.
from Yah.
Successful among men in terms of kingdoms, but wholesale, completely and totally excluded from the covenant. Yah actually used the Hebrew vernacular that says, no way. Not under any circumstances. I won't even consider it. Absolutely not. And yet Paul says the Torah's covenant is based upon what God said, absolutely not.
Yes.
And he says that that covenant that's memorialized in the Torah enslaves, that it's of the flesh. Now, when I came to that, as I was translating and trying to study Paul's first letter, that to the Galatians, as it is maintained in the oldest manuscript, P46, and I read Paul saying there's two covenants, not one, and that the covenant in the Torah enslaves, and it was with Hagar. When God's testimony is exactly the opposite on every one of these issues, then if you're going to be honest, you have to say, I was wrong by trusting Paul. I was wrong by thinking that Paul spoke for God. I was wrong to be a Christian because Christianity exists based solely on Paul's letters. I was wrong for having rejected Yahusha, and the Sermon on the Mount, as it's recorded in Matanyah, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, in favor of Paul. I was wrong is where that led.
That was my turning point.
Yeah, it was mine.
That was my turning point right there.
Yeah, you know, at the time that I did it and the time that you did it, and we'll speak about this more after the break, but I would say for me it was the most painful and yet the most enjoyable moment of my life. And how can something both be the most painful and the most enjoyable point of my life is recognizing that Paul lied. And we'll consider that, and hopefully you'll have a similar response, Don, when Shattering Myths continues after the break. Shattering Myths, we have only 6 minutes left. We, in addition to having Don locked in here, we also have Glenn. But I did want to express why I said that coming to Galatians chapter 4, where Paul speaks of the Torah's covenant enslaving and being with Hagar, and then him introducing a new covenant, that how that was the most repulsive and the most enjoyable moment of my life. It was repulsive for me, agonizing for me, because I realized that I'd been played for a fool. And I thought that the one thing that I was capable of doing reasonably well is using evidence and reason to come to a logical conclusion. And yet, with this being blatant, I was a advocate of Paul, and I felt like I had been raped. And then I thought of all of the people who had been misled by Paul, and it was agonizing. And then I lost a lot of friends when I began to go where the words led. But then it was euphoric. Once Paul is separated from your mindset, once you clean your brain of everything that Paul said, you are then able to see Yahweh as he is, appreciate the covenant as it is, understand the Torah as it is. Don, before you respond, I'd love to have Glenn's comments here, and then we'll get your thoughts on this as well. Hello, Glenn. Welcome to the last segment here of Shattering Myths. I'm glad you're calling in.
I'll be quick. I'll just sort of playing mischievous gadfly today. First of all, this question of pain and pleasure, you know, relative to your experience, it sort of begs the question of whether or not you're masochistic. But, you know.
No, I certainly didn't. I didn't choose the pain, but being violated, you know, knowing that you've been violated because you've been played for a fool, that's a very humbling and painful experience to know that all of my life I was played for a fool by a man who is obviously a con, who knew he was playing me for a fool. And I was disappointed by that. It hurt.
Well, apparently not so obvious, actually. You know, not so obvious. If it were so obvious, not, you know, it would have met with, you know, reputation much earlier and much more frequently.
You know, I would agree with you and disagree. I realize that since the vast preponderance of people don't see that Paul was demonically inspired, since that isn't obvious to most people, I would agree with your statement. But yet, when you actually read what he wrote and you compare it to what God says, it's blatant. I mean, it's right there in your face. It's irrefutable. And so it's from the perspective of knowing the truth and being freed of the lie that I now know that I was played for a fool and that I should have been smarter than that.
Right. Well, so, but then apparently so should all many leaders in church or the way.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I'm not the only one who was played for a fool.
Now, I've asked you the question of the Torah being written on our hearts in the Renewed Covenant.
Yes.
This is my mischievous gadfly question. Well,
yes.
So at that point, the devotional purpose of the unused book of the Torah will probably become more apparent as well, eh?
The unused book of the Torah?
Yeah.
What do you mean by the unused book?
Well, you tell me.
Oh, you mean the fact that the Torah is not used by most people for guidance?
No. I mean the unused book of the Torah. If we just rattle off the goy names, Genesis, Exodus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. You tell me which one's the unused book of the Torah.
Well, the unused book would be Numbers. Would be the one that's
precisely.
That's usually.
It's part of the Torah, and from a devotional standpoint, it is almost utterly unused.
Yes, I think it's a combination of lots of reasons. It provides a historical continuity and perspective that is useful in. And Yahweh grounding his Torah guidance in history, but it doesn't have as much of the guidance as it has the history. And so it's what I'm convinced, however, is the times that I have gone into Numbers, into it's actually In the Wilderness is the real name of the book.
I've
analyzed the names and the genealogies and the like. What I have found in Hebrew is profound truth, but it's a lot of work, and the truth is much closer to the surface in the other books of the Torah. So, Glenn, I'm glad that you called in. Don, there's much more meat on this bone, if you will, and you are always such a welcomed contributor to this program. I hope you call in again and often and tell the host that he is indeed not doing his job.